Once you've been shown how to enjoy this castle, you will find rest in everything, even in the things that challenge you the most. You will hold in your heart the hope of returning to the castle, and no one can take that from you. Teresa. She knew all too well that once you found your way in to your own soul, once you knew that place within you, you would never again want to be separated from the blissful interior that is your own divinity. Let's enter your seventh mansion. I cross the bridge into the silent bliss of the seventh mansion of my interior castle. I close the drawbridge and forbid all outside influences from entry into this holy place that is my soul. Here in my castle, I am alone with God, and under God's light and companionship, I discover the depth and beauty of my soul. I embrace the power of prayer, and I open myself to divine guidance. I surrender myself to become as a channel for grace, healing, and service as God directs my life. The journey into the castle is not a Catholic's journey. It is a soul's journey to illumination that a Catholic nun discovered. It's an archetypal journey of ascension through prayer, contemplation, and the arduous task of following the instruction to know thyself and to comprehend in exquisite detail the power of creation that you manage through the power of your soul. This is a journey of transcendence and transformation, of shifting your base of power from external to an internal encampment of mystical vision. Entering the castle is your cosmic pathway to illumination, carved by a cosmic mystic who happened to be in her lifetime a Catholic. But make no mistake, this is not a journey for Catholics. This is a journey for all mystics who are called to be of service through their soul. And any great journey to illumination is a journey any mystic would recognize as cosmic. For Teresa, reaching the seventh mansion was reaching union with God. There was no other place to go. For her, this was the final stage. This was full mystical union, and there was nothing else to say. There was no other place to go. And yet she tried to describe it. She said, in the seventh dwelling, everything is new. Now God is ready to remove the scales from the eyes of the soul so that she can see and understand something of the blessing he is granting her. He does this in a strange and inexplicable way. The soul enters the innermost chamber through a transcendent vision of the three divine persons, which imparts to her a particular representation of truth. At first, an incredible clarity descends upon the soul like a luminous cloud, setting her spirit on fire and illuminating each of the three aspects of God individually. At the same time, through a wondrous kind of knowledge, she apprehends the truth that all three persons of God are one substance, one power, and one knowing of one God alone. What Teresa is referring to is the profound vision she had in the seventh mansion, where all doctrine came together, and she transcended even the doctrine of Catholicism to become a cosmic being. And one of the great doctrines of Catholicism, the Trinity, that, like any myth of any religion, is first understood literally, taken biologically, taken fundamentally, that there was really a Father, a Son, and a Holy Spirit, that there was a mating of a God and a woman. That transcendence, that eventually the journey into the soul is a journey of shedding, like she says, shedding the mythologies that carry the power of God to you. Shedding the mythologies that contain the power of God so that you could encounter the power of God. And within her Catholic tradition, one of the great mythologies was that Jesus, in his journey from Jesus to the Christos, to the Christ Spirit, was a journey that put into place the template of the Father, the Son, the Holy Spirit. Now, was that a literal force, or was that a trinity of power? What was that? There are many that would have to take it as a literal force. And I am not even teaching Catholic dogma. What I am doing is using an example of a mystic who, when ready, transcended her own tradition. That within the seventh mansion, she was even lifted out of her own tradition and into the experience of, even that was used to represent a greater greatness, which is you. Beyond even one tradition that could contain you. So she says, what this really was, is that you are power and knowledge and truth. And so that's what that Trinity really represents, a transcendence of even that tradition. But imagine the size your soul must be to leave behind even that. The beloved package your own journey came in. The way that you shed even your path. And you say, I shed even that. I am so free. I am so free. And this is when she became a fully cosmic being, truly belonging to no faith. Like Buddha, belonging to no faith. Like Jesus, when Jesus entered the Christos, belonging to no faith. These great cosmic beings, transcendent. This is the seventh mansion. What we can take from this is how wondrous it is to know that the evolution of our journey is not an evolution toward a religion. It is not an evolution toward one faith. It is not an evolution toward one God or one myth. It is obvious that we must use a route, so we're all going to be born into a route. You cannot go into the soul without a guide. You cannot. You will implode. You will get lost. And you will get lost, I assure you. Make no mistake, because you will find that your interior is an extraordinarily complex but very simple place. The complexity is in its demand. It is a relentless companion. Once you open truth, what are you going to do? Ignore it? Once you open a part of you that can see clearly, do you honestly think you can leave that part of you unattended? It will never stop asking, well, is this truth or not? Where's the truth here? Where's the truth there? What do I do now? Am I following the truth or am I not? Is this authentic? Am I being authentic in this moment? Give me the courage to be authentic. What is the deeper truth? Am I following false God or am I following my guidance? Do you think you can turn that off? I don't think so. You can try, but good luck to you. If you don't recognize that isolation is essential, that silence is essential, you're going to run in as if you've done something wrong, as if something's wrong, period. You're going to run away and think, I need a therapist. Why do you need a therapist? What do you need a therapist for? Because you're unhappy? Because suddenly there's nothing on your screen to entertain you, to keep you occupied? Because maybe, just maybe, you're being called into silence and that is not an indication that you're dysfunctional? And how dare you ask, how long will this go on? As long as it's necessary. And that may be 5 years for some of you. And that's it, people. Get a backbone. That's it. That's the way it is. Stop being a baby about what it is to have a soul. The inner life is not a health spa for a comfort zone. It is a tough place. And if you put yourself out there as someone who you think is capable of being a conduit of grace, capable of healing, capable of helping another person, then you better be willing to undergo the fire. Or get into the kitchen and peel potatoes and call it a day. But don't you dare put yourself out there. Unless you're willing to say, put me through the fire. And I take my watch off. And I'll show up for prayers. And I will do so gladly. Here in the seventh mansion, what you need to understand is the nature of deep healing, true healing, is ultimately a mystical experience. It is not a physical experience. It is not an experience of the mind or an experience of the heart. In all my years of working with healing, I've watched people go through their visualizations and go through their deep work, going to therapy, and all of which I have a deep regard for, make no mistake. But I'm talking about healing. Not working to alleviate pain or working to make a situation a little better. I'm talking about making you receptive to what you would call a miracle. Making you receptive to actually transforming something going on in your body that you want to release. The mind is not capable of doing that. The mind's an instrument. It does what you tell it to do or it drives you crazy. You load it up with goods. It's an archive. It's a library. It's a functional system. It's a show-off. It's the keeper of reptiles of a certain sort. But if you think for one moment that the mind is capable of an act as phenomenal, as mystical, as healing, you are indeed out of your mind. Because it can't. It can't even go near it. And I watch people do things like visualizations, and I see them tighten their brow, and I see them just tighten their jaw and get into it. And I think, you've got to be kidding. You'd get more out of a shopping spree. At least you are relaxed in a shopping spree. At least you're not obsessing. At least you are not battling with this force, because most people's minds are the most undisciplined pieces of equipment they'll ever go near in the whole of their lives. They can't for 3 seconds take charge of one thought, and they go left and they go right. And I tell people, for example, in workshops, keep your eyes closed. They can't do it for 2 seconds. They can't give their body one command, and they're going to give their body the command to heal? I don't think so. Healing is not mental, intellectual, reasonable, or rational. Particularly if you think your suffering is irrational and undeserved, and you're going to go in that warehouse and get your body straightened out when it's the very warehouse that's telling you you didn't deserve it in the first place? I do not think so. So is healing conducted in the heart? This harbinger of great love we hear so much about? Are you kidding? I don't think so. Go visit people's hearts. That place, for most people, is a war zone. A keeper of trauma. A file cabinet of bad memories. But it is hardly a place awash with unconditional love. It is hardly that. And that force of unconditional love and grace that is required for healing is hardly abundant in the hearts of most people. Maybe most people would like to theorize that, but I don't even think so. My experience is that's not true. Most people do not pray, please make me unconditionally loving. That is not a prayer that most people say. Most people do not get on their knees every day and say, let me pray for those who do not pray for themselves. Let me devote part of my life for the welfare of other people. Most people aren't that generous of heart yet. Not yet. But what size of heart would you need to blow a disease out of your body? You think you need a micro heart? A heart that's conditionally loving? That still plays the little games of, I don't approve of you, maybe I do, maybe I don't, and plays games of power manipulation? Where you are just crawling with reptiles? That kind of heart can barely heal an infection without help. So now we're talking major league here. What really is healing? How did the mystics bring that about? And what really is a miracle? Just go up to that seventh mansion. I want you to just take a deep breath now. I want you to imagine this visual. That you are in a beautiful room, one room that looks like a Zen monastery. It is exquisite, but it's just one room. And you see the rice paper doors, and it is exquisitely clean. And you're in this room and you think, where am I? It's so beautiful. It's so beautiful. And now you're going to open up these screens so you can see on the other side. As you're standing in the center of this room, you stretch out your arms and you think, this is the most tranquil, beautiful, wondrous, light, perfect air I have ever breathed into my body in my life. I have never felt such exquisite air enter my body, ever. And now you're going to walk over to that screen and you're going to split the screen with both of your arms, and as you look out, you see that you are literally standing in this gorgeous room that looks exactly like a Zen monastery room on top of a mountain in the Himalayas. What lies in front of you is this gorgeous mountain range, snow-capped and a blue sky and white mountains, and you see no one for miles, no one, and this gush of fresh, cool air fills your face, rushes over you, and you think, God, is this beautiful. Nothing is as beautiful as this. I have never been as lusciously refreshed as this. And then turn around and you see that there is a small table on the floor, and it's a writing table. I want you to imagine yourself walking over to that table, and you're going to sit on the floor. And there's a quill pen, and you look up and to the left, a door opens. And in comes a messenger from God and comes over and places in front of you a scroll. And you're going to open that scroll. And first you think to yourself, what could be on this scroll? Is it messages for me, guidance? Is that what this is all about? Or what am I supposed to do with this scroll exactly? Well, open this scroll. As you unravel it, you grab your pen and you write all that you appreciate about your life. You write all that your soul appreciates. You write beauteous words of graciousness. You merge here with heaven, and you feel the graciousness of how close you are to God. And all that is beautiful about your life, every single thing you can think of. You write what you appreciate about your life. This is not about problems. No mention of your sorrows, enough of that. This is only about what you see as goodness, what you appreciate, who you love, how beautiful it is to be loved, who you have been given to take care of in this life, and how beautiful that is. The opportunities you have on this earth to be of service. This is a room of exquisite contact with the divine. This is your room of union. And then release the scroll. Release it. And let your guide take that. This is a room where you come to appreciate, to be one with God. This is your room of union, a beautiful room of union. This is a place in your heart. This is your room of union. And now remain in this room. All is one. Take a deep breath and pause. And now we enter into the mystic soul we enter into your soul as mystic, your soul as healer. And you invoke grace. You are a channel for grace. And in this you pray, let grace flow through me and do no harm to anyone. You are a channel for grace, and here in the seventh mansion, you are one with God. And you visualize the whole of humanity beneath the mountains of the Himalayas. You are at the highest place on this earth. And you visualize grace running down the mountains of the Himalayas to all the nations of the earth, to all the people. You are called to pray for this beloved earth, for all of the people on this earth. These are all of your people. Their sufferings are your sufferings. Their joys are your joys. There is no distinguishing these individuals from you. Your heart belongs to the cosmos. The sacredness is in your heart and you in theirs. You pray their grief through you. You pray their joy through you. This earth is yours to care for. And you place your hands over the earth and you say, I am a channel for grace. Whatever grace can go through me to this earth, let it run through my soul now. And you place your hands over the earth and say, this is my beloved earth. I am its servant. Healing is a mystic's call. True healing occurs through grace. And grace is a silent power. It moves through you, through prayer, through faith, through you feeling the command, say a prayer for that person now. Through you feeling the command, hold this person in your heart. Through you feeling the command, that person is not strong enough to forgive. You forgive for them. And then their heart will be able to do that for themselves. You take that on. These are the greatest acts you can give humanity. These quiet, powerful acts of grace. This is what it means to be of mystical service to humanity. The greatest calling, to become an invisible act of power and grace in this world. You are a channel for grace, and you are blessed. Amen. Now take a deep breath and come on back. Now for some fundamental guidance on how to live outside the castle. This is essential guidance for mystics outside the castle walls. Number one, develop the gifts of your soul. Do not hesitate to respond to what you know are your interior callings. Because the gifts of your soul belong to others. They don't belong to you. You were given these gifts because these are the graces that humanity is counting on. Never let fear stop you. Number two. Live congruently. That is a practice. Congruently means where your soul is aligned to your mind, to your heart, to your choices. When you know that your choices are not aligned to the way you really feel. Here's a small one. Do you care where we eat? No, and you do. You may think that's no big deal, but it's precisely because you can't stand up when it's no big deal that it's a big deal. It's one thing to say that, well, I tell you, it's not that I care so much where we eat, but I do care where we don't eat because I really can't have this. And beyond that, I just want to put my vote in. And on a scale of 1 to 10, I'm a 7 when it comes to cooperation. It's not that big a deal. I don't have to get my way. I'm not one of those. But you feel like you've represented, or if you really don't have to represent yourself, you're fine. But if you're one of those people who says, I don't say anything because I don't want to upset anybody, and you end up upsetting yourself, you chalk that up as an act of official self-betrayal. And then you go inside. It has nothing to do with restaurants. It's got to do with, I can't even honor myself with a simple question. So I'm going to just note that. In number 3, my practice of self-reflection, my practice of contemplation, my practice of being with you, dear God, and my soul. You must have a practice. And that practice is not a hobby. It's a devotion. Devotion's not a word we hear in the contemporary spiritual culture because it's a word that comes from the sacred, not the spa. To be devoted is to make a vow, is to say, I'm doing this not to lose weight, not to reduce stress, not for reasons of vanity, but because this is my practice. Not because I'm afraid, I'm sick, I'm thin, I'm heavy, I'm short, I'm tall. Not so I can find out who my soulmate is, or to get more stuff, or to find my job, or to get. This is my practice. Period. That's where the sentence ends. End of it. There's nothing more to say. And that practice must include self-reflection. How did I fare today? What did I say? Was I honest? Did I have integrity? Did I keep my word? Did I break my word? And you don't do it to say, I get an A, I get an F. There is no grading, people. No grading. No shaming yourself. No criticizing yourself. This is not allowed in your practice. You are never to do that. Nor are you to do that to another. You are to approach yourself with endless love and compassion and never judgment. And you are to say, how did I do? Where am I? Ah, I see I have a challenge with this. I see this comes without effort. Why is this a challenge? All right, then I will work on this. Is there an indication I must have a reptile in the house somewhere? I'm going to pursue the reptile. Maybe I need to have a reptile dinner party. And you invite your soul companions over and you say, we're talking reptiles tonight, serious business. Not wounds, reptiles. In the wound game, you blame someone. You are never to speak blame again. Blame is a game. That's for children. Wounded children. You are mystics out of monasteries. You're building a soul with stamina, and souls with stamina do not blame. Keep alert at all times, as often as you can. What are you keeping alert to? You keep alert to your inner field of vision. Who's in your castle? Don't let anyone in your castle. Never. Watch if your drawbridge is open or closed. Always, your gate is closed. No one but you is in your castle. Now, how would someone get in your castle? People get in your castle because you share too much of your privacy, of your journey with God. You chat it away. You chat your grace away. Instead of going into yourself in prayer, you go into a quiet time. Instead of knowing that I'm in a time of transition, which is why nothing's changing on the outside. The silence, the non-movement is a gift so that I pray through and make the right decision. That's why nothing on the outside is moving. This isn't about the fact that there's no one out there and I haven't lit enough candles. This is about go inside and move with wisdom. Silence on the outside means you're gripped with fear. Go find the fear. And I'm not going to move anything on the outside. Because if you make a decision right now, you'll decide from fear. So I'm holding everything still until you get the reptile out. That's why you go into stillness. That's why. And if you talk it out and say, I'm so scared, there's nothing moving, is something wrong, nothing's going on. You're inviting people in for Alice's tea party. And you are absolutely misusing the grace of your castle. Be alert for the presence of evil. Be alert. Know that this is temptation. I'm not talking chocolate. Knock it off with that stuff. I'm talking as soon as you start bragging, as soon as you are seduced by glamour, as soon as you have to start wearing your bubbles, bangles, beads, there are signatures of power that announce to the public, I am involved in this kind of power or that kind of power. You attract the devil to your door. The more you go on the inside, the more silent you must become on the outside. You never tell someone else they're wrong because they're not wrong. They're on their own journey. As you go into your interior life, as you go into your inner self, I promise you that the seduction of God will happen. You will encounter a profound moment of quietude. It will take you over. A level of soul quietude that makes any massage you've ever had or any relaxation feel like tight shoes. That will be so overwhelming for you that you will implode with the need to tell someone, you have no idea what happened to me. And to this I would advise, find your spiritual companions, your soul companions. As Teresa would say, as I would tell you, because we are longing for companions of the soul. But be cautious that you never, ever reduce your deep and precious interior experiences in a way that positions you to put them out there and then feel that you've been disrespected and insulted. Because if you do, you've asked for it. You've set yourself up because you opened your mouth. And you should have known better than to expose your own journey. Because your own interior life should tell you, why are you bringing this up? Why would this be of service? And instead of talking about your interior life, become your interior life, and there's nothing to talk about. Channel grace as a daily basis of service. The more you go into your interior life, the more attuned you are going to become to the world around you. And the more attuned that you are, the more that you are going to feel, perceive instructions on channeling grace to other people. It's just going to happen. Because that's the instructions for mystics out of monasteries. And you need not go into deep and altered states. Just take a deep breath, close your eyes, and say, I am a channel for grace on behalf of that person. Pause for 5 seconds and let it go. And just say, bless them. And let it go. No attachment. And no business card that says, I'm a channel for grace. That's my occupation. Call me if you need it. You're flying under the radar. And you live in the whole notion at all times that you are a channel for grace. This is such a challenge because you have from this point on to see the world as sacred. Not just this part or that part, but this world is a monastery now. And you are devoted to it. Not committed, devoted. And devoted is a word that implies that your companion is God. Now, I need to emphasize that such devotion does not and will not shatter your ordinary life. But what it does bring is the extraordinary to your ordinary life. This incredible quest for meaning and purpose that has captured, if not imprisoned, the contemporary spiritual population is in fact the result of the awakening of the soul, but the inability to access it. And when you find that you have embraced what it is to have the soul active and what the soul requires and to live the soul's discipline and put that with the physical world and make that one and the same without fear, without the division of church and state, body and spirit, that has characterized the last 2,000 years, that those who honor the soul go into the monastery, celibacy and poverty, and those who follow the way of the body go into the world, that is a model that is over with. And yet, being the first to try and put it together is a challenge, but bless you for responding to that challenge. It is exactly people like you who are being called as sacred activists and mystical activists. It is exactly people like you who are being called to see and to bring wisdom and higher thought into social change, into political change, into the change of the atmosphere of how to bring cultures together, of how to heal a wounded world, of how to be spokespeople for wounds within neighborhoods, because you know how to walk into such wounded areas channeling grace. This is exactly where mystics out of monasteries belong. You know exactly how to walk into places of great crises, which will characterize our beloved planet in the years to come, with a prayer in your soul saying, I am a channel for grace. Where do you want me? And it may be cleverly disguised in exactly the package you're wearing right now. Only the difference is you are now a soul on fire. You know you are now a mystic. And you know that it is the mystics who transformed this world, whether you are dealing with the Buddhists whether you are dealing with the Christians, whether you are dealing with the great Jewish mystics, whether you are dealing with Chief Seattle, it has always been the mystics who took on the darkness and said, come this way. It takes a great deal of courage. Make no mistake. But there is no other path. There simply isn't. Not for anybody who's conscious. There is no other path. The practice in the castle. Remain active in your castle. You have to continue your work within your castle, coming back into your mansions. I want to remind you to add on your own rooms. When you know that you have a new reptile or a new concern or something new about yourself that you have to work with, add it on. Now, don't be too ambitious. You can't get out of the lower mansions even if you try. You could take a running leap and bash into the door of the fourth mansion and you're going nowhere. So it's just smart work to go into the mansions and take them on one at a time. As Teresa would say, just the way she wrote them. I emphasize again that she said the way of illumination is a way of prayer. Prayer is intimate encounter and intimate entry. There's no such thing as a wrong prayer. And if you must begin with basic repetitive prayer, go back to basic repetitive prayer until you feel, and you have to force yourself to break from repetitive prayer, because it's true that repetitive prayer lets you off the hook. You don't have to think. You don't have to be conscious of what you're saying. So it's fine if you want to do that because you happen to like the prayers, but mix your prayer time with your favorite repetitive prayers, because some of them are stunningly beautiful. And then you have to devote at least 10 or 15 minutes to prayer that is spontaneous. You have to evolve past the point where for you prayer is petition, a Christmas list, a list of protection petitions or stuff. We have to grow out of that. You have to mature. You have to evolve past this idea that life is stuff and get on with the business of growing up as a soul. You have to mature to where you say, I am simply here. I'm here. Or take beautiful spiritual writings and read them and dwell on what they mean. Just allow yourself to be inspired to leave the world of the five senses and enjoy the quietness of your castle. Go into the castle in that way. Take beautiful inspired writings and read them and notice, and what you'll start observing is that when you read something really, really beautiful, you become unaware of time and space. That little place is a sample of the castle. You're in an altered state. You're not conscious of what's going on around you. Therefore, where are you? You're within you. Now you know what the first mansion feels like. And reading inspirational literature will help you get to that place. And working on yourself When you take on, for example, your first mansion and you go in there and you go into your first corridor on humility, and you sit in the room and you say, what things in life have I, what guidance have I just not listened to, and what am I not listening to now? Because my fear of being humiliated just has so much power over me. And then you start withdrawing from the outside world. You don't want to hear the outside world. And then you go through all the chatter in your mind. Your mind will start producing memories, because you already know memories. Memories are facts. But you want more than the facts. You want things that haven't occurred to you before. That's when you know you're engaging the soul. What is revealed to you in the room comes from another place. That's what you're looking for. Deeper revelations that are not from what you already know. You're looking for what you don't know. You're looking for this deeper and deeper truth. That is how you get to know what your soul feels like. And then as you pursue the part of yourself you never really wanted to look at, what Teresa calls self-knowledge in the reptiles, and you finally get comfortable with, you know, that's just part of who I am, and you deal with this, and you get more and more comfortable with what God expects from you, which is living the congruent life, which takes a lot more courage than living the incongruent one, which takes no courage. That's when God can come directly for you, because you have no fear of being in the light. Then the light doesn't scare you. And that's when the mansion says, now come on, now I got you. And the journey of ascension begins. So continue your devotion in the castle, even if it's just a little bit per day, even if it's honestly 1 minute, even if you just sat down and said, wait a minute, I just have to picture myself in my castle. Wait a minute, let me just, and you get in the castle, and you get in your first mansion, and you get just to the chapel and say, you know what, I'm here, I just want to breathe with you. Just let me breathe in. Just let me breathe that stillness. Let me just be silent. Let me just be silent for just a second. Let me just gather my soul. Okay. All right. Okay. Oh, amen. And now you go back to the world. And even in that brief second, everything has changed in your life because you got back to your castle. Everything. Even if you just touched the grace of your castle for 15 seconds. Don't neglect it. Get back there. Finally, I also want to suggest that you develop a circle of grace. The circle of grace is a circle of soul companions that gather together and unite their light as a way of sharing illumination, sharing your capacity to pray together, sharing your ability to heal. Because that is what light and grace is about. And forming a circle of companions, you also nurture and take care of each other. One of the focuses of being a soul companion is to use your light to nurture each other, not to support wounds or ever encourage a person to go backwards in their life, but to remain within present time and practice the highest order of truth with stamina. Meaning, forgive, release, move on, see clearly. These are the highest callings of the mystic, and they are difficult, but it's harder to choose a toxic life than to choose a light-filled one. It is harder to drink poison than to drink light. I promise you. I wanted to end the Entering the Castle series with a story that's in my book. And that's that, how did this whole work with Teresa really begin? And I was teaching an institute on intuition and mysticism. It was a three-part workshop during the course of a year, three different weekends. So the second weekend came around, and I was going to do the first day on Christian mystics, the second day on Eastern mystics. So on this first day, I was going to teach the beginning on John of the Cross, then Teresa and Ignatius Loyola, Meister Eckhart, Francis of Assisi. I was going to go right through them. So in the morning, I was going to start with John of the Cross. But when I sat down on the chair, I happened to have Teresa's work, The Interior Castle, instead of Dark Night of the Soul. So I thought, well, it doesn't make any difference. I'll just start with Teresa. I mean, and as I grabbed her book, I heard, "Follow me, daughter," in my ear. And I knew she was next to me. And I had what she would describe as the intellectual vision of the mystic. As I held my place, I closed my eyes and froze very, very tight. I said to her, "Don't let them know we haven't met, Teresa, and I'll go with you." And they didn't know what was happening to me. They just saw that I couldn't move, and they gathered around the stage. Now, everybody else for the workshop had a whole itinerary following what I was going to teach for the weekend, because I do an itinerary in my workshops. And it certainly didn't say Teresa of Avila and nothing else. But everybody saw that apparently I was talking to someone other than them. At the end of that session, I was convinced that no one saw that, but that somehow Teresa and I had managed to keep our newfound relationship very quiet. Well, everybody saw it. And, you know, I'm past the age where I care, and I'm too secure in my own sanity. And I knew that I had a visitation from Teresa of Avila. So the rest of the weekend, I clung to her book like a lifeline. And I'd never studied her academically. But that weekend, I taught her as if I had been a scholar. I just ramrodded through the Interior Castle. I followed her. At the end of it, I was writing my book on intuition to mysticism. I was doing a book on the evolution of one to the other. And I had been writing it for 8 months, and I had 8 out of 10 chapters done. My workshop went from Thursday to Sunday afternoon. I was just up in the high altitudes, teaching her at a pace of light. And then go home, and now I'm all by myself in my house, like a hot air balloon that goes whoosh. Now I'm back on Earth, and I went right up to my office. I go right to my computer, and I hit delete, and I wiped out my whole book. Wiped out the whole book. I didn't print it and save it. I threw out everything. I wiped out everything. I hit delete, 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 delete. So then the next morning when I got up, I sort of spiritually sobered up. As I sat at my coffee table, I thought, you just deleted 9 months worth of work. You got a deadline in fight. You don't even have a copy of that book. You have no backup. You are in such trouble. But in my soul, I knew I'd been with Teresa of Avila, who, I might add, was never a saint I was drawn to, ever. But as I think of it, Spanish was a language that fell into my head, like the effortless effort. And for me, Spanish is music. It's music. So the next day, as I sat at my kitchen table, I said to her, "Listen, I just threw my career on the line. This better be authentic." So then the mail came, and I got an envelope. I received an envelope in the mail from someone I didn't know from England. And I opened it up, and there was this bookmark in it. And I pull it out, and I flip it over, and it has a very difficult but very distinctive handwriting. And I can't read the first, it says Caroline, and then it says, and I can't read that first at all. And I'm looking at it thinking, what is that? And then it says, "Praying for your health and protection each day. May God guide you with every step, with love and prayers." And I can't make out the name. And then it says, "Thank you so much for lighting our way." And then I notice that it's from a Carmelite monastery. So I thought, oh my, but then I flip it over and it says, "Let nothing disturb you. God alone suffices. Teresa of Avila." So I said, "Okay, Teresa, we're on." So the months began to pass as I started to write Entering the Castle. And it was arduous because I began to live like Teresa's nuns. I cut out sound and TV and radio and really contact with the outside except for when I had to leave to teach or whatever. And then Christmas rolled around and I canceled all my Christmas guests and wrote through Christmas, wrote through New Year's. That was very difficult. But I got another card from this person, whoever this person was, who said she'd lit candles for me at a Carmelite monastery. I said, "Who is this person?" I don't know. So I finished the draft at the end of March, and on the day that I sent the draft of the last chapter in the end of March, I took off for Finhorn, the Finhorn community up in northern Scotland that I'd been a part of for 20 years. It's a alternative lifestyle community, a very spiritual community up in northern Scotland. And I went up there to do a workshop. It's my favorite place on earth. So I'm up there, and I'm about to start teaching, and on the podium, just like this, is another one of these, this bookmark, just like that. And I look, and I grab it, and I flip it over, and there's the same handwriting, this very distinctive, angular handwriting. I said, "I will not teach this workshop until this person comes up here." So up comes this little woman from Ireland, a beautiful woman. And I said, "Who are you?" She says, "Colette." And I look at this and I said, "Yes, that's right. That's the name. And the C looks like an L here." And I said, "Who are you?" And she said, "Well, I was told to pray for you." I said, "By who?" And she says, "Well, Teresa." And I said, "Well, and her guidance, she had to pray for me." And I said, she said, "You know, I didn't like you much when I was told to pray for you." She said, I thought you looked, you know, sort of, well, you know. No. And she said, "But you're not so bad." And she said, and then she said to me, "Is it over now?" And I said, "What?" She said, "What you're doing? Is it over?" And I said, "Yeah, it's over." She said, "So I could stop praying for you now." And I said, "Yeah." And she said, "Okay then." To think that someone's praying for you. For the first time, I understood what it is to have someone hold grace. And I didn't know it. And it gave me such respect for what I even wrote about myself to be an invisible act of power. I had an invisible candle. She's very dear to me now, and I'm never without this bookmarker. What I can tell you as we close this series is you have no idea how close heaven is to you. None. Whatsoever. I'm not sure if that's spelled N-O-N-E or N-U-N. As you leave your seventh mansion, remain in the energy field of your castle, with grace surrounding you and protecting you. Repeat to yourself, I am a channel for grace, and I make myself available as a channel for grace in this world. I am a mystic without a monastery. This earth is my monastery, and I am devoted to the God within me, the God around me, and the sacred earth beneath my feet. Let nothing disturb you. Let nothing frighten you. All things pass away. God never changes. Patience obtains all things. He who has God finds he lacks for nothing. God alone suffices. Teresa of Avila. Thank you.